Words on Water.
This episode is brought to you by Arcadis, the leading global design and consultancy firm for natural and built assets. Visit www.arcadis.com. Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is the host, Travis Loop. Excited for this episode. It's a bit of a different fun format for us. We are doing a roundtable discussion, and we're going to be talking about what it means to be a fit for future utility, a resilient utility. And so we have three guests on here for this episode. We have Melissa Meeker, director of the Water Tower in Gwinnett County. Melissa, how are you?
I'm doing great. Travis, how are you?
I'm doing good. I have Esteban Azagra, Water Business Advisory Lead for Arcadis North America. Esteban, how's it going?
Doing great, Travis. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And I have Zakia Seymour, Principal Management Consultant with Arcadis North America. How are you today?
I'm good, Travis. Happy to be here as well.
We know that there's a lot of shocks and stressors on our water utilities today, right? From all different types of angles. We know there's more coming down the road in the future. So as we talk about this idea of a fit for future utility, what are three words that you might use to describe that utility? We'll start with Melissa.
Thanks, Travis. You know, when I think about a fit for future utility or a resilient utility, to me, three words come to mind. It's tactical, equipped, and flexible. So for tactical, you know, for me, it's we know our weak points, no matter what community you're in. It could be flood prone. It could have energy challenges, electricity challenges, and bad weather. We know those weak points, and we need to strategically plan for that. So we need to be tactical. We need to have the resources and the relationships necessary to respond when needed. So that's the equipped word. And then flexible, staff have to be empowered as we move forward with this utility because it's, you know, we need to be able to be nimble and move and take advantage of certain situations and deal with situations without having to worry about the bureaucracy. Yeah. Of a utility. So that flexible really steps in as well, I think.
Sure. You know, we hear the word strategic a good bit, but tactical is a bit of a new adjective, if you will. And I like that. It's got a different twist to it. Esteban, what three words would you say describe a fit for future utility?
To me, a fit for future utility is a resilient utility. You know, we define that as the ability to respond to not only shocks, but also, you know, the stressors, the things that build up. And I do believe that you need to be innovative. I think the problems we're going to be facing in the industry will not be solved with the solution we had in the past. I also believe you need to be efficient because there is going to be a need to invest. And maybe the amount of money available is not going to be that much. So efficiencies, I think, are going to have to play a role. And then I have to pick human-centric, right? Everything we are asking ourselves to do has to do with behaviors, culture, mindsets. And if we forget the human side, it will not happen.
Oh, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. I'm glad to hear you mention that. And I think we'll touch on that a bit as this conversation goes on. Zakia, your turn. Three words that describe a fit for future utility.
Yeah, thanks, Travis. Listening to Esteban and Melissa, you could all have very similar words. So even with Esteban, I completely agree. Having a resilient utility, one that's able to withstand and also recover quickly, that's also an issue as well, right? And then just tacking on with what Melissa said as far as being flexible, the word that came to my mind was agile. Hmm. So being able to swiftly adapt to any of the changing needs. And then also just being connective, right? It's all about connecting the ratepayers to the people, to the data, to the systems, to the waterways. It's all about being interconnected.
I wrote down one word that each of you said that jumped out the most to me that I kind of liked, or maybe that we don't hear as much. And so I picked tactical, human-centric, and connective. Those are the three that jumped out if I had to pull from your words. So, great. All right, another kind of exercise here. Let's talk about maybe what asset we think is most important to building a fit-for-future utility, and then why. So let's give some choices. We'll say choose from this list: people, technology, data and knowledge, money, brand, infrastructure. Now, those are all important, but if you had to pick one that you think is really critical to building a fit-for-future utility, which one would it be? And let's go in reverse order this time and start with Zakiya.
So when I thought about this question, you know, I'm thinking when it comes to the water sector, you know, we are here and we'll always be here because of the people. Mm. You know, we locate where we are because there's water where we are, right? And it's through the people that we always improve. Get new ideas, new products, higher productivity. So to me, it's always the people that's going to be the most important asset for the future.
I like it. Esteban, which one of those would you choose? And you can, just because Zakiya has chosen a word, you still, it doesn't take it off the list, just to let you know.
That's good. Have your pick.
You read my mind, Travis, because, you know, thinking about the question, as important assets, I think, you know, our customers are key. It's not in the list. They're not in the list, but also infrastructure, right? We are a heavy industry from an asset point of view. But again, reading the question, to build the fit for future utility, to make sure we are efficiently running those assets to deliver the services to our customers, I have to agree with Zakiya. I think the culture, the people that run the utilities at the end of the day are the most critical element.
Okay. And then, Melissa, you still have the whole list open to you.
Well, and I'm going to break the rules and just say, to me, it's impossible to choose one. For me, they're all interlinked. It's sort of the chicken and the egg. You know, the people help build the brand because the infrastructure and the data builds all of that. So it really is, to me, about developing the plan and implementing it so that we can go where we need to be as opposed to prioritizing one of those things. Hmm. You know, we know what that ultimate vision is. We just have to take baby steps in order to get us moving in the right direction.
Yeah. Okay. We'll allow you to break the rules there. It was a good answer. So, I know you all are familiar with this report, and I think most of the water sector is familiar with the Brookings Institution report that came out, Renewing the Water Workforce. Terrific document. I encourage everyone to check it out if they haven't seen it. But they looked ahead at what water careers might see the fastest employment growth over the next, you know, 6, 7, 8 years. And they talked about these positions: software developers, information security analysts, and market research and marketing specialists as kind of the big top three occupations. What's your reaction to hearing that? And we'll start with Esteban this time.
My sense on this one, Travis, is that I'm not surprised. We are in a customer-centric industry at the end of the day, and customer expectations are changing throughout the different industries, right? Not only for us, and we are not going to be an exception. So the expectations of the customers are only going to increase. And actually, I think our industry has an opportunity to increase the place it actually has in society because of all these challenges we have with weather events, water affordability, and why not. I believe there is more awareness of the importance of water. So how to engage, again, the customers are going to be important. And then just to paraphrase what Melissa said before, right, everything is interconnected. We are a data-rich industry. We've always been. But I think now we have the tools like business intelligence and so on to unlock the power of that data. And we need to do it maintaining it secure, right? So that's what I think is going to increase the need for data scientists and cybersecurity experts.
Let me ask Melissa, what's your perspective on hearing those three water occupations projected as the faster employment growth areas?
Yeah, I mean, certainly we are seeing a change in our industry. I wish it was changing a little faster in terms of digital technology, but we're working on that. But you see that emphasis on digital technologies and what they can do to improve both internal efficiencies and our customer experience. I just would point out that even with that growth, and I think that's why those are identified, the increased need in those areas, we're always going to need operators and people out in the field doing work. So we're always going to have that component. I don't see those types of positions going away. I think it's just the new jobs, new types of jobs that were called out in the report.
Well, as someone that's on the communications side of the water sector, I'm encouraged to see marketing specialists as one of those top three occupations for faster employment growth.
Absolutely. You know, it's the value of water. We've got to keep marketing it.
Yeah, for sure. I guess kind of following up on this a little bit, what do you think this means for in terms of who utilities employ, recruit, and retain? If this is the general direction, or these are some of the important kind of careers that are going to be developing, how should utilities react to that report from maybe a practical standpoint? Zakiya, what do you think?
Sure. Well, when I looked at all of those different offerings, one word really came to mind. It's all about engagement, right? Mm. And so trying to understand how those individuals, whether or not software developers, information security analysts, how are we asking those folks to engage now? And so when it comes to how utilities employ and recruit those individuals, it's all about behavioral science. It's being able to understand human behavior and those trends and how people actually want to engage. So everything from what we do as just individuals, you know, how we spend our money, how we budget, how we are connected, how do we gather information, and then taking all of that and applying it to the water sector. And so that then says, you know, we now need to recruit people who don't know just STEM. We need to recruit people who know how to talk to our clients, and internal and external, and being able to communicate the value of water in that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I also find it interesting, you know, software developers, information security analysts, these are also positions that are not historically found at water utilities and at right. water companies, and they're very hot careers overall, right? It's very competitive to find people for these jobs. Melissa, what do you think utilities can do to start, you know, carving their way into that space?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's that recognition that we have all of this data and all of these opportunities around data analytics. And we also just happen to have a whole new generation that's so focused and so attuned to the digital world. So how great to sort of combine those and really attack our workforce challenges by maximizing our SCADA systems and data analytics and even our training programs to be more, gamer related, so that we can attract that Gen Z and keep them engaged and really focused on the problems of tomorrow. It's a great time to be in our industry.
Yeah, no, that's a point, a very good point, and that's one I've heard a little bit, that we need to be, again, marketing and talking about the importance of the water sector and what our mission really means to our communities and our country. And then that can help us with that recruiting and retention, especially for these kind of new job areas. Pivoting a little bit here, I wanted to talk about another popular topic, and that's diversity and inclusion. We're hearing more and more about the importance of this. And so I'd love to hear your perspective on what role diversity and inclusion plays in fit for future utilities. Zakiya?
Sure. I love this question because I'm as a diverse candidate, I feel like we have a part. It's basically including diversity in everything that we do, the employable pools. And it's not just about race or sex, excuse me. It's about just understanding the new candidate type. So you have everything from high school graduates to veterans to individuals who are formerly incarcerated to refugees to all these different ways that we now can start to understand how they can also engage as employed individuals into our field. I think it's great. Arcata specifically has made, you know, a commitment to hire political refugees in Europe as a part to engage within the water sector. And we also are founding sponsors of WEF Inflow. And that's something that we, you know, take near and dear to our heart, to actually be able to identify students of underrepresented minorities who are interested in professional careers in the water sector. Mm-hmm. So being able to just not look at your typical schools, your typical approaches, being able to cast that net wider and get exposure to individuals who might not even know about this field.
Yeah, I want to follow up with you. All super important points. Why do you think that it's important for water utilities to have a diverse and inclusive workforce?
That's I love that question, because our ratepayers are diverse. Hmm. We need to represent our ratepayers. And because we all have different, you know, concerns and issues. And once you bring that perspective, once you start to look like your client, you can understand your client better. Hmm. And that's from the utility side, from the consulting side. We all need to be able to understand the different perspective that looks at affordability, resiliency, sustainability. I mean, it goes to all of those different things. And so once you actually are able to look like, you know, the constituents that you serve, then you're able to really understand their issues and be able to address and talk to them in a way that they're understanding. Going back to the marketing specialist, how do you communicate with me, and how do you explain what the value of water to me is, can be very different depending on who you talk to.
Travis, yeah. I'm sorry. The other thing that's really cool about, to me, diverse teams is that the research shows us that they're more productive.
Exactly.
Very interesting. I had not been aware of that. I would love to take a look at that research and share that a little bit. Very cool. We know we're in this digital era where technology is just prevalent and becoming more pervasive with every moment, really. So we have artificial intelligence and predictive analytics and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We know that those things are going to play a huge role in the resilience of utilities as we go forward. I'm hoping you could maybe elaborate on how so. Esteban, do you have thoughts on that?
I believe, you know, people talk about digital disruption and look at some research. I think the last one I read was from McKinsey. We are the second from the bottom industry that has not been disrupted. When you compare all the industries out there, the only one underneath us is actually hunting. So my point here is we are way too important of an industry not to be impacted, as you just said, by digital trends, by new tools. And the key here is how can we leverage those things to ultimately deliver a better service, and becoming more resilience can benefit from that. And I'll give a couple of examples, right? At the beginning of the conversation, I mentioned that being resilient is, in a way, the ability to react to stressors, to make sure that they don't build up and get us in trouble. And if we think about a couple of stressors that I think we would all recognize, affordability is one of them. Can we pay for the cost of water, right? And in the long term, if you look at the trends of increasing population, that still requires, you know, water being treated, but actually less consumption, less money available, that's a big stressor. And aging infrastructure being another one, right? I think we all know we're going to have to replace more infrastructure. So I mentioned at the beginning, again, when I was asked to pick three words, that efficiencies are going to be key, because to be able to tackle those two stressors, you're going to have to do more with less. And artificial intelligence, what we call advanced asset management, can really make a difference here. Those tools can actually help you optimize, as an example, asset management, not only in the capital sense, but also in the operational expenditure sense. That's what people call as OPEX. And you can actually come up with, again, the optimal use of your monies. Do you replace all your assets, or do you put more effort into maintaining some assets so they can last longer? My last point, there was a research from Bluefields, a research quite recent, that I think anticipated close to $18 billion of capital expenditure could be saved if you use advanced analytics in our industry. So big role ahead of us, I believe, for most of us.
Wow, that's a huge number, huge opportunity for sure. Following up on innovation, I mean, you know, it was mentioned earlier, and I'd like to hear a little bit more about what role innovation plays in this fit for future utility. I mean, innovation is one of those words that's just used a lot. So, Melissa, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what that word actually means to you and how utilities need to be innovative, what their approach is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, it's about being better prepared, right? Prioritizing your resources and being better prepared. And what we're focusing on at the Water Tower is really that better trained personnel to handle the worst case scenarios. So being proactive instead of our traditional reactionary responses. I think one of the biggest challenges, and you know me, I always play devil's advocate. So one of the biggest challenges I think that we have in the water industry right now is that we have a lot of new technologies. I get a phone call every day. You know, you're putting together a water innovation center. Of course, technology vendors are going to reach out to me every day. And they're all really solutions almost in search of a problem. So I think one of the things that I'm focused on is working with our stakeholders to really focus on helping service providers and equipment manufacturers to understand what the utilities actually need. With resiliency, you know, we're looking for innovation, but that could be processes, it could be technologies, and that's definitely key. We know we can do better, but we have to be tactical and prioritize that. You can't just respond to the latest technology.
Sure.
So I think there's a blend of new innovative technologies and processes, but it's gotta respond to the utility's needs and where their focuses are. So it's going to be different for every utility.
Melissa, I'll just make a point. I think it's very important what you just said, right? I don't think innovation or digital can be a standalone, even a strategy by themselves. They need to be fully integrated into your business strategy and support that and align with that.
You've got to be tactical with your innovation, right?
That's right.
Kind of going back to the workforce issue a little bit, and want to talk about culture at water utilities. And as water utilities continue transforming to be resource recovery facilities and being these hubs of technology, you know, and as different jobs come in and all of this happening, and they try to market more to the community. What role does culture at a utility play in it being resilient? Zakiya?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You know, technology is always going to advance. You know, so utilities that want to be resilient must be able to not only embrace the changes that occur, they must also encourage them. I think it's important for them to be able, folks to be able to explore, to attempt things, to question things. And I feel like culture, especially if it's an innovative one, it really sets the stage for all of those things to occur. And so you need to have that as a level playing field almost for those things to happen.
No, absolutely. Either Melissa or Esteban have any additional thoughts on that?
I'll just toss out, just building upon what Zakiya just said. I mean, to me, we all know innovative utilities that are out there, and certainly they have fantastic leadership. So at the top, sort of a top-down approach of, I'm pushing you to be innovative, to think outside of the box that you're traditionally in. But it's also bottoms up, right?
Right.
The ideas come from the bottom. So the culture to me is really coming at it from both angles. It's a leadership that's empowering staff to think outside of the box, and it's staff who actually want to explore things and make a difference. So you've got to feed that culture along the entire organization.
Concluding question here. We'll kind of give everyone a shot at this. So a utility that wants to start building resilience, what's one action, one thing that you would recommend that they start with to head down that path? So let's start with Melissa.
Oh, sure. One action.
That's it. Only one.
One action.
Yeah.
As is typical, I can't do that. So, you know, for me, it's really the situational analysis. What's the first challenge that comes to the mind of the utility? Then what data do you have regarding that challenge? What data do we need to better understand how to address that challenge, implement it, and then figure out what we can learn from it? So it's, again, baby steps, but that first one is really questioning, okay, first challenge that comes to your mind. Just don't even think about it. Just spit it out and then figure out how we move to address that challenge.
Okay. Esteban, what would you say one action a utility could take to start their path toward resilience? What would one action be?
I might be saying a similar thing than what we just heard from Melissa. I do believe that embedding uncertainty in your decision-making progress is the number one thing I would push for, right? And not necessarily looking at that as a negative. I think there is an opportunity, right, to take advantage of a crisis, but every time you make a decision within your organization, if you embed uncertainty, like not everything is under control, that will force you or move you or push you in a direction where you're going to be thinking beyond the obvious and come up maybe with an optimal decision.
I really like that. You have to be a little bit bold. You have to be a little bit creative. You kind of have to not let yourself get caught up in paralysis by analysis, but just, hey, we're not totally sure how everything's always going to work out, but we gotta make some choices and try some things. That's cool. Yeah, sorry, Zakiya, what would you say?
Otherwise, yeah, and going on that, you know, that point, and then also the point that we talked about previously as having people as the most important asset, I think it's really critical to doing an assessment of your organization to be able to see, you know, what those critical issues are, how you can actually go ahead and figure out what those things are. But being able to assess the workforce, understanding that it's not just, you know, what we call the silver tsunami. It's the folks who are also, you know, going to be in your organization for 3 to 6 years because they know they're going to not stay that long. So being able to understand the organizational health of the utility, I think, is the one thing that I would also say that utilities can do to start understanding and building upon their resilience. You got to know what your issues are.
Yeah, fantastic.
Here.
Well, thanks to all three of you. That was a really interesting conversation. A lot of great points, a lot of great ideas, things I've taken away from it. I'm sure listeners have as well. So thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Words on water.